Today's episode of No Borders, No Race is going to be very different. As you may have listened in the past, I've found myself going back and forth between doing pop culture musings to sharing my thoughts about current events, which I feature in my A Bastard Soapbox segment. However, this past year, there has been a very disturbing trend that has been taking up the news sphere. The rise in hate crimes against Asian citizens. The fact that this is happening has left me feeling sick, as many of my friends in the community have showcased not only how bad it's gotten since 2020, but just how bad it's been for a very long time. It's a sort of racism that has the Asian community not only targeted by white people, but also by various minorities. And that fact is something that baffles me to the core. In the same way that I'm shocked that people in the gay and lesbian community often shun bisexuals and transgendered individuals. And some of these folks will throw hate at these people, and then go off and eat Chinese food, or watch anime, or listen to K-pop. Another fact that baffles me. I mean, if you can't respect the people that made the things that you enjoy, then you don't deserve to enjoy said things. But today, I don't want to simply parrot what has been going on and how these people in the Asian community have been feeling. I want them to speak for themselves. So on this week's episode of No Borders, No Race, I will be giving my microphone to these voices in the community. Because if you hear it straight from their mouths, then odds are it'll affect your understanding of it for the better. And I want to take this time to thank my friend Ari from Scarlet Rhapsody for gathering some of these voices. You'll be hearing about her experience later in this show, and I honestly couldn't have put this episode together without her assistance. You'll hear some music in today's episode, although not as much as you're used to. This episode of No Borders, No Race is more about putting a spotlight on these recent events, as well as give all of you listeners an understanding of why we need to better ourselves when it comes to discrimination. You won't be hearing my voice again until the end of the episode, so for now, enjoy the music, and please, listen to what my friends have to say. Thank you, and welcome to No Borders, No Race.
America.
My name is Ryan Omega. I'm a live stream producer and game designer. I'm Filipino American and also LGBTQ. How do you solve the problem of Asian hate? Most people assume that if you call out people as racist or supremacist, it will either force them to change their ways because of shame or mark them or some kind of hate revenge where their life will suffer because they are outcasts. But that hasn't happened, especially under the Trump administration, because it assumes that shame or moral guilt will change them. In fact, some people double down in their stances because they end up finding people who think maybe their reaction or opinion is not so extreme. So I want to examine why this happens. So I try to think about what we are saying as POC and what they are hearing as people who are white. For whatever reason, people who identify as white do come to me and talk about these feelings because I don't react with the same immediate judgment. And what I have learned is they honestly don't get it. But if they are asking, then they are ready to learn. They want to ask questions because this discrimination or hate is not an inherent part of their worldview. And yet others can jump in with the statement, how could you not get this, without looking at if they were in the position to understand in the first place? However, while it is not an inherent point of view, it can be acquired, which means having others unlike them in their community and also those people given the space to share their culture and their joy. Also, people who generally travel to places outside the US will have this broader perspective and appreciation, yet a huge underlying problem is the US economy and work culture doesn't permit most people to travel and experience other parts of the world. And that contributes to an increasingly isolationist perspective that the United States holds. It's to the point where American people will call out a white person born and raised in Africa as being racist, or a Spanish person living in Japan sharing Japanese culture as cultural appropriation. I feel that this term is very unique to living in America in the effort to, quote, not look racist, unquote. Not combat racism, not look racist. It's performative allyship that says more about the person who used it than it helps the people of color or LGBTQ communities that it may have been intended for. The other big problem is that we don't give white people any space to process their internalized perspective that is harmful. If we don't do that, they will react with emotion, because that pain is foreign to them, but normal to the oppressed. We will suffer because they have the power of being the dominant peoples in society. In fact, that's exactly what happened in Atlanta. The news media, trying to avoid calling the shooting spree in Atlanta a hate crime, was insincere. And I imagine they were trying to be cautious because of all the implications and headache that it would mean for them, but by trying to be as neutral as possible, they erased any level of human connection to the dead. And then trying to say that this redneck kid had a bad day was displacing empathy of others to someone who did not deserve it, and that is maddening. Even when Asian people died, they were still considered the other. And I bet you a few of you said you used the term redneck, and therefore your argument is not valid, and stop listening because that was their moral trigger, which doesn't change the fact that people died, and that didn't raise the moral trigger at all. And we come full circle to the accusations that they are racist, and we start all over again. So what do? Another peace rally, post an anti-Asian hate graphics for a week? And my answer is, there are things we can do. We can donate to charities that provide legal protections, whether labor or immigration. Yes, we can donate to places that provide awareness, but we are already aware. So now it's about what can we do and find the work to overturn statutes and laws that are inherently discriminatory, and that requires lawyers or advocacy groups. Another place to look into is media advocacy and Asian representation. There are many communities in the United States where Asians or Asian Americans do not exist in their towns, so the only connection with those with Asian descent is the media. In lieu of knowing an actual person, that will be their reference in knowing Asian people, even if it is fictionalized. While we want Asian heroes for our young Asian children to envision themselves as heroic, we also want Asian heroes because it enables those outside the group to think positively about us. And it helps. This is not just in front of camera. This is also writers, directors, publishers, and other content creators, as well as those who can bring their voice and perspective to more people. One of the most important things we can do in America, regardless of what area of the political spectrum you are in, is allow people to enjoy Asian culture. That sounds so weird to say, but I have heard so many times, you can't wear that kimono. That's offensive because only Asian people are allowed to wear that. Or, you have a Chinese sword in your study? Are you an edgelord? Or, are you dating someone who is Thai? Does that mean you have yellow fever? Is she a mail order bride? In the attempt of people trying to correct others about cultural appropriation rather than appreciation, not only are they reductive, but those are ridiculously racist views masquerading as being politically correct or woke in the attempt to call them out. And let's say that a woman did end up marrying someone to come to America. Think about the choice she had to make to leave her world behind in the hopes to make her life better, and most likely she is sending money to her family to support them. Judge her knowing that. Think about all of the people who were working at the massage parlor making a living because that was available to them in that moment when they were shot up. think about the number of times work was considered immoral rather than survival because of the power structure of society. That is how oppression works. This is only the surface of what has happened in Atlanta. There's so much to unpack, including gun control, the suggestion that these workers were tempters, people linking to the origins of COVID in China, the intimacy worker industry, etc. The crime was tragic, and the commentary that was implied with so many problematic ingrained things held by society and America, and as an Asian American myself, it was overwhelming. There's a saying not to read the comments on YouTube, and yet those comments are all over the news as headlines, and that's a lot to absorb. And yet the solution is going to be found in joy. Talking on Twitter, as we were talking about the unfairness of the Asian hate, I remember a white man who is an ally said, "You have my sword," in regards to dealing with haters. And my response was, "Thank you for your sword. I would rather share a meal with you." He mentioned his wife, who is Thai, that she makes a mean feast. And I told someone that my mom taught me how to make lumpia. And somehow, suddenly, my Twitter was full of what people can bring to the potluck of food. And that we will one day, when the pandemic is over and everyone is vaccinated, stuff ourselves full of Asian food and food that everyone else will bring. I know how strange that is, but anyone who knows Asian culture knows that we make damn good food, and it is not the worst thing to believe that if you like my lumpia, you will like my culture, and we are going to be friends.
もう一度あなたに会いたい。もう一度あなたに会いたい。もう一度あなたに会いたい。
Hi, this is Dame Scarlett Asmable. I like cats, I like anime, and I'm also a Filipino American. The recent hate crimes against Asian Americans has opened up a lot of wounds. If I were to describe my experience in finding my voice as an Asian American, it would be gaslighting. These recent crimes have made many of us Asians revisit our past traumas growing up because of our experiences are downplayed, erased, or invalidated. Growing up, I had a hard time really appreciating my culture. My parents would only speak to me in Tagalog if they were upset with me. This made it really hard for me to learn the language. Women in Filipino media were portrayed as victims of all kinds of assault or capital punishment for crimes they did not commit. They always cried and cried and cried. And did I mention the crying? Children in these types of media were always portrayed as victims of abuse, and they too cried and cried and cried and cried. Meanwhile, I hard identified with Slappy Squirrel from Animaniacs. Just kidding. And then I discovered the Philippine national hero, Lea Salonga. For a while, I wore my hair back, wore a white button-up shirt and jeans, the same look she had when she auditioned for Miss Saigon. I stan Lea Salonga hard when I was 10. I found that most of my most positive Filipino representation through Broadway shows. Hey, I even learned that Dee Dee from the Mickey Mouse Club was also Filipino. No wonder I felt so drawn to her. I love her cover of Escapade, by the way. And then I started watching anime. Sailor Moon was my hero growing up, and say what you will about her being blonde, blue-eyed, but you know what? No one gave her crap for having a bento box for lunch. The magical girl genre of anime was the most empowering thing I could ask for when I was a preteen, when American media wasn't providing much in the girl power department. However, kids at school were worse. They identified as Asian. They appropriated black urban culture and claimed that they were in some kind of gang, started singing Rolling with the Homies from Clueless. But they went back to their affluent homes, taking private piano lessons, cramming for the next test because God forbid you gotta be on your exam. I was bullied by these gangster wannabes for liking Sailor Moon. Bullied by Asians for liking anime. How weird is that? And in high school, I identified as a cat girl. I felt so disconnected from my identity because if I don't really feel like I'm vibing with it, with my culture, and I'm not vibing with it within my school community, within my peers, I just had a hard time really connecting with it. So here's what I did. Anime fan, wore cat ears with my Catholic school uniform. I identified as a cat girl. I looked cute. I made nyah noises. Yeah, you can call it cringe, but hey, teens are allowed to have an identity crisis. Some folks had a goth phase. I had a catgirl phase. And, you know, I had this hard time connecting with my culture. I just kind of figured it might be easier when I'm in college. I met more anime fans. The girl weebs, call themselves the Joy Luck Club, would let me into their circle for a while. Until they started gatekeeping me because I didn't know a lot about Japanese pop culture. You call yourself an anime fan when you don't know what Anna Miller is? I came to college to learn what I wasn't taught. Not to be, you know, this gatekeeping BS. And I also had a white boyfriend in college, too. I vented this to him. And his answer is, but you're still you. It doesn't matter whether or not you connect to your culture. At the end of the day, you just need to be yourself. I was supposed to take that as inspiration? When I took Japanese 101, he responded with, so, you're taking a Japanese class to impress your Asian wannabe friends? Yet he forgot I was a weeb. I've been meaning to learn Japanese, and it didn't help. He also gave me the nickname, my exotic Philippine angel, to which now I respond with, and then forgive my German here, Gott weib ich will kein Engel sein. I took Asian American Studies in college. It really did help me immerse myself in understanding where I fit within the American context. I ended up minoring in Asian American Studies at the university that founded Ethnic Studies, San Francisco State. Many of my professors were on the forefront of the Third World Liberation. It was the best experience I could have about learning about myself in the greater cultural context. Having this knowledge about where I am in this greater context as an Asian American also meant losing friends. I saw problems in memoirs of a geisha. I critiqued the use of Chinese actors in Japanese roles, the controversial source material, inaccurate costumes, etc. Yet my weeb friends would praise it because it's pretty. They weren't comfortable with the fact that their favorite was being called problematic. What I found is that they weren't willing to listen to the traumas of people, and they'd rather consume pop culture and stay comfortable consuming their pretty weeb pop culture. After a while, you get tired of losing friends. You keep your head down. When a friend expresses brown-facing themselves to cosplay Talene from Soul Calibur, you keep quiet because no one wants drama. When a judge at an anime con gives a high-ranking award to brown-facing, you keep your head down because you don't want to sound like a sore loser. A photographer at a group photo shoot refuses to take your photo because you're the wrong Asian. You're brown. You clench your fist and restrain yourself from punching him in the face. A friend is watching Heroes of Cosplay and complaining that the contestant didn't use enough tan to make themselves darker. You stay quiet because you don't want to lose that friendship. You don't want to lose that spot as a bridesmaid in the bridal party. When a popular cloth cosplayer goes in full yellow face and starts yodeling in the Walmart, and that video goes viral, there's a point where you can't be quiet because you have to break that silence. And then you see your friends defending yellow face for accuracy or liking said character. And when staff members from Labyrinth of Jareth try to mansplain you that Filipinos aren't true Asians, they're Pacific Islanders, you counter with them with a world map showing that indeed the Philippines is in Southeast Asia. You start losing friends again. And when you make a post why the word Oriental is problematic, you're gaslit by fellow Asians saying the issue is small potatoes or it's not a big deal. You start losing friends again. And these aren't alt-right folks. These are people who would normally wear pussy hats, show up at the Women's March, show up at the Science March, the Hillary Obama stands. These are people who should know better. You start losing friends again. Invalidation, gaslighting, and a fear of being alone is what surrounds you. It took me until college to finally accept my identity and to embrace it. To defend and speak up for it took another decade. I continue to hold presentations on awesomely bad Filipino movies just so I can talk about cheesy 80s and 90s action movies from the Philippines. I continue to dress up in my homemade Waves uniform to World War II events, even when given to stink eye. Seriously, do any of these reenactors know that the Philippines helped out the Allies? Do they even know about Go For Broke? I continue to research and identify awesome Filipino heroines, like Commander Lee Wai-Wai, the commander who wore red lipstick before going into battle, and Gabrielle Silong, the revolutionary leader who went up against the colonists. I continue to read about Filipino mythology and spooky stuff. Seriously, who doesn't love a good scary story to tell in the dark? I continue to do pinup shoot after pinup shoot so I can get published in magazines. I mean, have you seen my curves? They're awesome. I continue to participate in the discussion of equity and take breaks when I need to. I continue to seek therapy to heal from past trauma. I continue to defend my interracial relationship from both the far right and the far left. I'm thankful I have a white partner who is willing to learn when he flubs up. I continue to post resources and information breaking the model minority myth of being a good girl. Let the haters talk. They decide to shitpost in the wrong neighborhood. I continue to cosplay and work with photographers who are all about shooting all kinds of cosplayers, not just the correct Asian. I continue to volunteer for roundtables and virtual discussions. If people don't know I exist, how will I be able to talk about my experience and validate the experience of others? More importantly, I continue to surround myself with friends and colleagues who support my journey with my identity. Having supportive people who understand my relationship with my culture and why it means a lot to me was a very long road. I lost a lot of friends along the way, but it seemed like they weren't true friends to begin with. For those of you who have been with me, thank you.
季節は色を変えて幾度巡らったもこの気持ち別れない花のように揺めいた意味を
Hi, I'm Carmilla Jo, and I'm a cosplayer and host of Carmilla Jo's Cosplay Corner. If you follow me on TikTok, you'll know that I often speak up on racism against Asians and my experience with being othered. During this increase with anti-Asian hate crimes, I want to point out the hypocrisy of white supremacists and some white cosplayers who are problematic in so many ways. First, within the cosplay community, there is gatekeeping cosplay based on race. They'll tell black cosplayers that they can't cosplay certain characters just because the characters aren't black. The irony is that oftentimes, the characters aren't white either, such as various anime characters. So why is it that white cosplayers can dictate black cosplayers not to cosplay Asian characters, but it's perfectly fine for white cosplayers to do so? Secondly, whenever white people say they love and respect Asian cultures, it almost always stems back to surface-level admiration of Japanese pop culture. In this blind admiration, white people will always spew nonsense of how Japan is the best and most civilized Asian culture, and choose to be completely ignorant of Asian history and how Japanese imperialism has traumatized the entire Asian sphere to this day. They don't realize that they're upholding Japanese fascism and willfully fetishizing the shallow aspects of Asian culture and insulting Asia as a whole.
I'm recording this on the same day that the man who attacked the 65-year-old Filipino woman on the streets of New York was arrested. No one came to that woman's aid during the attack. One bystander even closed a nearby door instead of, say, rushing out to help her. It is an intense day on a number of intense days lately for Asian Americans like me. But I should start at the beginning. My name is Amanda Jen McManus. Most people call me Jenny. My middle name is from my birth name, Park Jin-sung. I was born in South Korea in 1983 and was adopted by an American family about 6 months later. And I had, genuinely, a wonderful upbringing. My parents also adopted my three little brothers. One is also from South Korea, although a different part. One is black, and one was our token white boy. Growing up, my parents made certain all of their children knew about our origins. Preserving my birth name in some form was just one way my parents tried to keep me connected to my heritage. They stressed that being adopted was special, that we were chosen. I knew from an early age where I came from. It was never a secret. Rather, it was a point of pride. They surrounded us with supportive camps, foreign exchange students, recipes, traditional dress, peers from our adoptee group, after school, weekend activities, taekwondo, language lessons, and more. Every adoptee should be as lucky as I was. I've met some adoptees who weren't told they were adopted until they turned 18. I can't imagine what that's like. That's horrible. I found that adoptees, especially foreign adoptees like me, are typically in two camps. You either grow up feeling like you don't belong and something is missing in your life, or you don't. I have never missed what I never had. I had a privileged, joyful life with a loving family. And I never thought much beyond that. I was very much in a bubble. If anything, it was me who made the active choice to not make my heritage a priority to learn about and be involved with. I've always been a proud Korean American, but I've also always identified more strongly with the American / white person part of my life and not the Asian. It's the old joke. I'm a Twinkie or I'm a banana. I'm white on the inside and yellow on the outside. I would often joke growing up about being a fake Asian. About 17 years ago, a friend convinced me to volunteer for this new thing called an anime convention. I had never been to any type of convention before. I didn't even know what Japanese animation was back then. But as I got more and more involved, I really found this deep and abiding love and respect for this industry. And then coincidentally, learn more about myself and my culture along the way. I truly believe that anime conventions, with their inclusionary community feel, anti-bullying and anti-harassment policies, and chances to learn valuable real-life work skills, actually save lives and improve them for the better. They certainly have for me. Because I didn't grow up in an Asian household, conventions have helped to immerse me in a world that I understood from a factual standpoint, but I've always been separate from. They've also made me more aware overall of social issues in the world, and they've helped me find my voice as someone trying to implement change in this industry for the better. And that's because, unfortunately, cons have also shown me firsthand how Asians are often viewed as perpetual foreigners, as others, even in an industry that revolves around elements of our culture. Many people are surprised to hear that conventions themselves struggle with diversity issues. Executive-level positions are rare for Asians like me, and non-Asian people in this industry dismiss my viewpoints and expertise regularly, or even target me for it, since they, and not Asians, are the majority. Often they do that as they claim to be allies. The ugliness of the past 5-ish years. The fact that members of my loving family proudly voted for President Trump, even as he stood on stages and called Chinese people a virus. The racist incidents that I've myself experienced more times than I ever had before. It really feels like all of this has come to a head recently. I have never lived in fear or considered myself very different. I'm just another American. But I don't recognize my country, what I thought it was and could be, in what happened in Atlanta, in the killings, and the people attacking Asians on the street. Casual racism was not something I really noticed before COVID, but last spring, where I live outside of Boulder, Colorado, neighbors in my city actually rushed to defend a local business that put up "Thanks, China," and a number significant to white supremacists on a sign by the road that I drive by every day. When I protested this ridiculous sanction of racism, the moderators of a local social media group actually banned me for it because they said we needed to support all businesses right now during this COVID time. So they took what was already a horrible thing and they made it worse. On the day of the Atlanta shootings, probably an hour or so before, a white man called me an ethnic in the parking lot of my grocery store. I wish I had a witty comeback for him, but I honestly just froze in disbelief. I've been a person who works to solve problems my entire life. I'm not really good at sitting idle. But with all the horrible attacks and the continued systemic othering that Asians endure every single day, I don't have an answer for it. This is not a problem that I know how to solve. I just have grief that the country that I love may have never been that country that idealized home at all.
を追い求めた者たちの熱情がその名を歴史に焼き付けていった運命に怯えるだけだった僕にも静かに火が灯ったんだラプラスの悪魔から見たら限りなく無に近いミクロでもそれは長く長く光る君もいつか僕を忘れてしまうだろう全てを奪ってく時は無情だねいつか僕の元へ
of people who have faced discrimination, hate, and bigotry in the Western world. These sorts of stories are far too common within the Asian community, and they have been going on for many decades. The solution to this problem may be simple, but it's having people acting upon this solution that's the difficult part. Some people just love hating, and it's tough to change the minds of those who simply don't want to change their viewpoints. The gaslighting, the appropriation, and the taking of one's culture and not respecting the people who created it has happened more often than not. The shootings, the assaults, the racist comments, the bullying, the gatekeeping, all of this has to stop. I get that other cultures deal with this. The problem is the Asian community is treated as the bottom of the barrel in these issues. The same way autistic people, like myself, are at the bottom of the barrel when it comes to issues in the disabled community. They're looked at as if their opinions and feelings don't matter. And that kind of thinking only does more damage to those who are being hurt. As Dame Scarlett said, this isn't just a problem caused by the alt-right or Nazis. Even the most far-left-wing liberals are guilty of this. The same people who march in women's rights movements or Black Lives Matter movements are choosing to ignore these attacks or attempt to silence these situations. They may claim that it's because the Asian community is stronger and more successful than other minorities, but that's obviously not true in the slightest. Using an excuse like this is not only lazy, but it also pushes more racist beliefs. What Ginny said about how the country she thought she loved may never have existed in the first place is something that I have been pondering about over these last few years. The rise in hate crimes, the electing of a hateful man as president, the cutting of important programs and funds, the disappearing of the middle class, all of this has been happening right in front of my eyes. And when someone tries to find a reason behind it all, someone who secretly wears white hoods will always be there and point the blame at anyone whose skin tone wasn't white. This type of thinking needs to stop. The killings, the bullyings, and the assaults that have been happening are the outcome of this way of thinking. If you can't respect someone simply because of the color of their skin, then you have no place to sit at my table. If you are a minority and are the one throwing this hatred and bigotry towards those in the Asian community, then you need to take a long good look in the mirror until you realize that you are in the same boat as them. This is what powerful people with ass-backwards thinking do. They turn us against one another, even when we're trying to better the world in different ways. And what we need to do is silence that hatred by any means necessary. I would like to thank Dame Scarlett, Ginny, Ryan, and Joe for sharing their experiences on today's episode. And I thank you all for taking the time to listen. We'll be back to doing a regular No Borders, No Race next time. But just because we're going back to normal doesn't mean the problem is vanishing. This will be revisited if the troubles keep getting worse. Believe me, I hate repeating myself, but I will hammer down the concept of getting along and not judging anyone by their race or skin color until it sticks into the thickest of skulls. So as we end the show with one of my favorite groups, I would like to also quote one of my favorite singers and songwriters, Mr. Frank Turner. When you're out there flattering like a lighthouse, I will shine. Be more kind, my friends. Try to be more kind. Like a beacon reaching out to you and yours from me and mine. Be more kind, my friends. Try to be more kind. In a world that has decided that it's going to lose its mind, be more kind, my friends. Try to be more kind. Thank you all for listening.
We can fix ourselves inside.
Hey guys, this is your King Baby Duck, Evan Borgo from the Electric Sisterhood and your host for the No Borders, No Race podcast. Each episode, we play the best, brightest, and hottest acts from Japan, America, Europe, and the rest of the world. Every song spun is but a mere taste of what you can expect of the artists heard, so if you truly loved what hit your eardrums, please be sure to support these musicians and buy their albums, EPs, and singles. Places like Amazon.com, CD Japan, Yes Asia, Bandcamp, iTunes, and even your local record store are great places to plop down some sweet moolah to let those artists know that they're doing a heck of a good job with their melodies. The more an artist gets support from listeners, the better the chance that they'll come to a venue nearest you to play the sounds that won your heart. This message is brought to you by the Boston Bastard Brigade, reminding you all to support your local, national, and international artists any way you can.